Hey everybody, this is Sophie and welcome to episode 193 of the Big Boo Cast. On this episode, Melanie and I, well, first we're going to talk about Hamilton a little bit more. And then we're going to talk about books. Specifically, we are going to talk about the books that have shaped us over the years. The books that mark the different phases of our lives. And listen, I could have continued to talk about this topic for a really long time, but we kept it as succinct as we could. So if you are looking for something to read this summer, we have a few ideas. We have a few books that we're going to mention. You can look in our Amazon store and find some of those books at amazon.com/shop/bigboo. I have added some to our storefront, and then we'll have just a big list in the show notes to put all those links in there. I just don't know, y'all, if it's going to happen, but you can copy and paste and search in the Google, and hopefully that will work. Anyway, thanks as always so much for being here. Thanks for listening to our silliness and our randomness, and we hope you enjoy episode 193. Hey, everybody, this is Sophie. This is Big Mama.
Hey, it's Melanie. It's Big Mama.
We have already had a 30-minute conversation before we got over on the podcast, and we have solved all manner of things.
Yes. What has happened is from the dawn of time, man has battled illnesses
and challenges.
So what is happening now is we are currently in a pandemic, in case you have not heard.
Yes.
And we have some thoughts.
Yeah.
But nobody's calling us about our thoughts. No. The CDC isn't calling us. Nobody's asking us. But we have some thoughts about it all.
Yeah. I have some thoughts. And, you know, listen, it's all going to be fine. We're all going to get through it.
Is it? Is it?
It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. I don't know.
I know. I keep thinking that this time next year, maybe it'll look a lot different. I don't know. But I don't know what that means. You know what I mean? Like, it'll look a lot different. Like, in what? That we're all going to be gone? That we've all been abducted by aliens? That I don't know.
Seriously.
I don't know.
Because, you know, I mean, even though we're sitting here right now, you know that even by the time this episode comes out, something else crazy is going to have happened.
Oh, 100%. I mean, no question. That's just the way it goes. Like, I feel like every day you're like, well, I didn't think it could get worse. And it just did.
But it just did. And it just got weirder, too. Like, every day. It's a whole new measure of weird. And on one hand, I'm really grateful to be here to witness it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I didn't know how boring things had been until, well, they hadn't been super boring the last 4 years. But still, like, what 2020 has brought to the table is going to be tough to top by any other year at any other point in time.
Are you saying how lucky we are to be alive right now?
I am. I'm saying look around at how lucky we are to be alive right now. Which reminds me, now this is a huge spoiler if you have not watched Hamilton. So you may just want to mute it for a second. But last night, I couldn't sleep. I've already told Melanie that. And it's because I have been back at work at school the last few days, and getting back into that mode has just made, apparently there were entire circuits of my brain I had shut down and now they are all fired back up. And, I have a lot of thoughts and lots of lists in my head and all that kind of stuff. But I was reading a couple of different articles about what does at the end of Hamilton when Eliza, when she looks out and she gasps.
Yes.
What does it mean?
I did same. I've been reading same.
Okay. So do you have a conclusion?
Okay, here's what I'm going to tell you. So this is a spoiler, so just know that. But like, I felt like when we saw it in person in Chicago, I absolutely got, in my mind, she gasped because she looked out and saw the audience and realized that his story had been told. Like, she realized the magnitude of like what she had done. And in the Chicago version, that was really plain to me. I had forgotten that. And so when I watched it on Disney Plus and saw the original cast, to me, I don't know if it was something about the gasp or because I had been, you know, distracted because of the you watching it with Perry, sure. But it wasn't as obvious to me. Like, I was like, why did she gasp? Yeah. I don't remember that. Like, I had forgotten that. And so I don't know if it was the, I don't know. But
yeah, I agree.
I do stand by that. I think it's because she's so overwhelmed with his story being told.
Right. Because in Chicago also, there was that very distinct moment when Hamilton sort of moved to the side and made way for her to walk to the front. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yes.
Like, yes. This is yours now. And then with the gas, I have just straight up goosebumps all over my body talking about this. I know. It's crazy. But so I too thought it was like, almost like an, oh my gosh, I did it. Like,
yes.
I told your story.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the goosebumps. But it seemed more dramatic in a way in the Disney Plus version. Like,
yes.
It seemed almost like she was startled by something. So I don't know. And Lin-Manuel Miranda says that he just, like, that it depends on the Eliza, almost, how that reads.
Okay.
But he said he definitely thinks that she experiences something that transcends time, whether that's she sees the audience and is shocked because she realizes that she told the story, or because she sees God. Some people speculate that she dies in that's the moment of her death, and she sees him and Philip. I don't know, but I have never really thought about it until the Disney Plus version came out.
Yeah, I felt like in Chicago, I absolutely knew. And in my mind, I was like, oh, the whole thing has been about Eliza. Like,
yeah.
that the whole Hamilton was ultimately about Eliza and what she did to make sure his story was told. And I really got that, the Disney Plus. But then what I really loved is I saw one article I read said that you can see, like, the way Lin-Manuel Miranda walks around her, like, that he goes from being the character of Hamilton to he walks around to the other side and he becomes himself. And he escorts her to the front of the stage to show her, look what you did and I told your story.
Like, goosebumps.
Yeah. And so I loved that, like, of thinking that that's when he steps out of character and becomes himself to show her, look at all these people seeing your story. That is my personal favorite version.
Well, it's very interesting. I love stuff like that. And I love somebody being genius enough to write something that way so that there's room for interpretation and there's not necessarily a right answer. I don't know. I enjoy the ambiguity of that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I continue to, and I promise this isn't going to become an all Hamilton podcast all the time. But did you see the article today? I think Annie Downs retweeted it on Twitter, but it was Lin-Manuel Miranda talking about him writing the song My Shot.
No, I did not see the article.
Oh, you were going to need to read that. It's so fascinating because the amount of, we'll link to it. I'm telling you, the amount of thought that he put into how he used one rap style, how he used old school rap for Lawrence and Lafayette,
yes,
and to use, and then how he transitioned it to more modern rap when Hamilton came in to show it was a new era, to the way it all tied together. I was like, this is like a level of genius that is just beyond. Like, I can't even handle it.
Is this a new article, or is this, okay,
yeah, no, it was a video. It was a video of him talking about it.
Because I do remember seeing something early on where he had like specific rapper styles, or the styles of different rappers for different characters, which I think is just genius. Yeah. I don't know. The whole thing is so stinking good. I'm so grateful for his creativity and the fact that he stuck with that thing for 6 years to get it done. It's so good.
I know. It's phenomenal. It's just phenomenal.
I did also, several people have reached out to let us know that there is another Phil Rosenthal series called I'll Have What Phil's Having that was on PBS before Somebody Feed Phil started. And I'll have you know that I bought that series last night on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
I feel like that's going to be a good use of $9.99. And so I bought it and I watched the first episode, which was in Tokyo. But I'm telling you, like, I don't know, like, physiology. I don't know about, you know, the chemicals in our bodies that cause us to experience joy or calm or whatever. But I'm here to tell you that whatever conditions this particular point in history, this huge span of time where we've been home, whatever anxiety or uncertainty I might feel in that sometimes, a Phil Rosenthal documentary seems to have every anecdote that I need, or antidote, yes. Not anecdote, but every antidote I need in order to just to settle down a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. It's very calming. It's very calming.
Yes.
And peaceful.
Yes. I was talking to my friend Brian this morning, who I work with, and because I told him about Somebody Feed Phil. And so he was telling me about some stuff that he watched. And then I was like, well, you also need to watch Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. And so we were talking about that. And I thought, you know, there is something about the shows that have to do with food.
Yes. Yes.
Something about it.
I agree. Well, and there's a new one too that I'd put it on my list, but Padma Lakshmi has a new,
yes.
What's hers on Hulu? Taste the Nation?
Yes. Yes.
And I think and I've heard it's really good, but I have not watched it yet, but I've always really liked her.
I do too. She has great style.
Yeah. So I'll be interested to watch that at some point. That's on my list. I felt like I needed to take a little bit of a break from the food shows.
I know.
I'll be back on it.
I say too much of a good thing's a good thing. I'm going to need Phil to go ahead and maybe start working on something else.
Yeah.
So that I can enjoy his travels. But
I know something tells me traveling is a little harder right now.
Well, nobody wants us. The situation we're in is that.
I did think it's a shame because I wish if I knew if the world was really ending, like if I knew that Caroline weren't going to college, you know what I mean? Like I would take that money that we put aside for her tuition and just go travel. You know what I mean? Like just blow it.
Take
if
some
I
knew trips.
That.
Yeah.
We go spend the rest of our summer like in Turks and Caicos or something.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah, be on like, the coast
sky's
of Greece.
The limit. Yeah, just whatever. Be like, we're going to go out in style. But, you know, sure as I did that, everything would get, but they'd be like, guess what? Ta-da, we have a vaccine. Everything's back to normal. And then I'd be like, sorry, remember that good trip we took? That's why you're not going to college.
Yeah, now. No, that would have been nice, but.
Yeah, no, not prudent.
It's not meant to be. Hey y'all, it's me with a quick break in the podcast episode to talk to you about Hydrant. As you well know, summer is here and it is crazy hot outside. And even though we all know that we should drink more water, it's hard to know how much water we're supposed to drink. And a lot of times by the time we feel thirsty, it's too late because we're already dehydrated. So the good news, so glad when there's good news. The good news is that it doesn't have to be a complicated deal. Because we can start our days with Hydrant. Hydrant helps us hydrate faster. Hydrant has created a refreshing electrolyte powder that you mix directly into water to more efficiently and effectively hydrate your body. It hydrates you quickly and keeps you going for longer. So each rapid hydration mix has the four essential electrolytes your body needs: sodium, potassium, magnesium, and zinc. And it packs a punch to help your body hydrate fast and stay hydrated. And Hydrant is backed by research. The formula was developed by an Oxford scientist. It's also loved by pro athletes, top performers, celebrities, and has thousands of five-star reviews. It's made with real fruit juice powder. It's delicious, it's refreshing, and it comes in a variety of flavors, including a new summer-friendly iced tea lemonade and fruit punch. I happen to be a big fan of the lime Hydrant flavor and also the blood orange. And here's what I love about it. It doesn't taste like an artificially sweetened fruit drink. It tastes like somebody squeezed fruit into your water. So you get more of a true fruit flavor, and the lime actually has a little tartness to it. It's not super sweet, so it's actually super refreshing. It comes in really handy pouches, so it's easy to pour into your water bottle, or you can mix it up in your kitchen in a glass. It's so convenient. and it's really tasty. Plus, it's backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love it, send it back for a full refund. I'm so happy to tell you also that we have a special deal for our Big Boocast listeners to save 25% off your first order. So go to drinkhydrant.com/bigboo and enter our promo code BIGBOO at checkout for 25% off your first order. That's drinkhydrant.com/bigboo and enter the promo code BIGBOO for 25% off your first order. If you make it a daily mission to stay hydrated, or if you want to do a better job of staying hydrated, you're really gonna love this. Alrighty, back to episode 193. Well, we thought on this week's episode, and we're recording this a little bit before it comes out because Melanie is going to be in Birmingham when we normally record. So, which is very exciting, especially low in this time of quarantine.
I know. I can't believe I'm getting on a plane. I know. It feels very like daring and exotic. Whoever knew that a flight to Birmingham would feel like such a leap of faith.
No, a nonstop flight to Birmingham. So Melanie and we're not even gonna be at my house. We're gonna kind of go away for a couple of days and do some planning and some thinking about the next year. But so what we decided, really what Melanie decided, because this was her idea, is that we would talk about on this episode some of the books that have shaped us over the course of our lives, which yes. I love.
Okay. Well, I was thinking about it because I got on a rabbit trail, which I will talk about later, which made me think of the topic.
Okay. So, I'm curious to know how many books are on your list.
I mean, I kind of have a bunch, but some of them are like brain or kind of lumped in together because they're by the same author. I haven't counted. I bet I have like 15-ish.
Okay.
So, but they kind of can go in categories, I feel yeah. like a little bit.
Okay. I think I have 11. Okay. Well, and I have, well, I have 10 and then one sort of series. Well, I have a couple of series actually.
Okay. Yeah, I do too.
So, anyway, okay. Well, why don't you start then? Why don't you kick us off?
Okay. I will start with, and this is from but if I were to trace back my love of reading, like to a thing, like yes. I don't remember, I mean, maybe my parents read to me at night. I don't really remember them reading to me a lot at night. Right. I don't know why. Because I think it was the 70s and whatever. Right. It was a different time.
Listen, they had to go to some fondue parties. They had fondue parties. They had other things.
We didn't know about children's literacy at that point and the importance therein. But I remember very clearly, I can envision myself and I can even picture where it was. But I think I had to have been in first grade. And I remember going into the Bammel Elementary School Library in Houston, Texas, and I discovered all the little Peter Rabbit books by Beatrix Potter.
Oh.
And they were little tiny, you know how they're like the little mm-hmm. small ones. And I like, and the girls would all fight over who got to check them out that week. They were in high demand. But I just remember those little books because of the size and the drawings and the whole thing. And I feel like that's really when I learned to read, were reading those books. They were magical to me.
I love that. I am the same. And of course, I was the third child by a mile. So I don't remember. I mean, I feel like maybe I had, I know mama read to me, you know, I had like, we had this whole, child life series. I think that's what that was called. I don't remember, but it was like all these children's nursery rhymes. And I do remember mama reading those to me, but I always liked my little picture books and that kind of stuff. But when I was in probably second or third grade, same deal, school library, I discovered the Boxcar Children books.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the first time I remember reading a book that was, you know, like longer than a picture book kind of thing. And I blazed through those Boxcar Children books. And so our librarian, Miss Coker, put me onto the Nancy Drew books. And if you are a child who sort of errs on the side of nosy anyway, then a mystery at that age, you know, I was just captivated. And I read, they were all hardback at that point. It was, you know, all Nancy and Ned and Bess. And I read every one of them. And what we didn't have in my school library, I found at our public library. And then I would go to Bookland in the mall and get some. But I read them all. And that's the first time I remember what would be a pattern really for my whole life, which is staying up way into the night reading a book. So Nancy Drew Mysteries totally got me hooked. And then as a teenager, that morphed into like the Sweet Valley High books I loved.
Yes.
And my friend Laura's mama used to read Harlequin romances all the time. And so then that went moved me into Harlequin romances, which moved me into a really good trashy beach fiction phase for a while. But all that to say, it was really books that were a series that that pulled me in more than like, you know, a one-off here or there. I loved kind of going in with a whole mythology of a town or a character or whatever.
Yeah, getting to know a whole thing. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I loved a series. Okay, so my next, I'm kind of doing these in chronological order or chronological order.
Okay.
Whichever one. Kind of the way I remember. So I feel like my next love was when I moved up to chapter books, there were, it's when I discovered Beverly Cleary. And to me, there were two that were pivotal. One was The Mouse and the Motorcycle.
Okay.
Something about that book. That little mouse riding that motorcycle. It was so, it just, I thought it was so funny. I loved it. I thought it was magical. I'm sure if I read it now, I don't even know what I would think, but I loved it. Like the whole Ralph the Motorcycle Mouse, that just captured my imagination. And then that led me to read all the Ramona books. But the first one I think I ever read was Ramona the Pest.
Okay.
And I identified with the, that book. I related to Ramona's character. There are still things from those books that I remember, like that Ramona called the lamp in her living room the Dawn's Early Light because she, from the Star Spangled Banner, it was the Dawn's Early Light, and she thought it was another word for lamp. Like, there's just little things like that that I still remember. And I read a whole bunch. I mean, I read probably most of the Beverly Cleary books, Henry and Ribsy and all those, but those two are the ones that were like the standouts to me that made me love reading chapter books.
Hi, it's me again with another break in the episode to talk to you about Care Of. Care Of is a wellness brand that makes it easy to maintain your health goals with a customized vitamin plan that helps you feel your best today and supports you long term. Care Of can make taking your vitamins and supporting your health goals attainable. And Care Of's easy online quiz helps you find the vitamins and powders that will support your specific health goals, like improving your fitness routine or managing stress. And Care Of has a new line, the Skin and Hair Collection, that helps you work on your beauty goals from all angles with a combination of targeted ingredients for hair, skin, and nails. Care Of is focused on the quality, science, and research that goes into each of their products and recommendations. And the vitamin aisle can be a confusing place. There's so many things. It's hard to know what you need to get, where you should start. And that is why Care Of's online quiz is such a great thing. You take the online quiz, you answer some questions about your diet and your health goals and your lifestyle, and Care Of will recommend a list of vitamins and supplements specifically for your health needs and goals. In addition to the fact that I love the Care Of quiz, I love somebody figuring out for me what it is that I need to do. I especially love the packets they send you. You can rip one off and throw it in your bag. If you're going to be away for a few days, you can just rip off the number of packets you need. Everything that they have recommended that you take is in that packet. It makes it so easy to keep up with and so much easier to remember to take your vitamins or your supplements. So happy to tell you that if you would like to try Care Of, here is all you have to do. You can get 50% off your first Care Of order by going to takecareof.com and entering the promo code BigBooCast50. That's 50% off your first Care Of order. Go to takecareof.com and enter the code BigBooCast50. Here we go. Back to episode 193. Well, and I would say after I came out of my Nancy Drew phase, like apart from moving into like the Sweet Valley High and all that kind of stuff, the big pivotal, big time, like books that even made me laugh a little bit in ways that I didn't know books could do were the Judy Blume books.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are on my list. Yeah, 100%.
And I guess that's like later, older elementary school, maybe when I got into the Judy Bloom books. But I love them. And I can remember going to the public library because Mama would drop me off there a lot of times on Saturday mornings and I'd just spend the day. But I can remember going and looking for, it was hard to find the Judy Bloom books because everybody liked to check them out because they were good. Yeah. They were funny. But like Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing, Are You There, God? Yeah. It's Me, Margaret. Mm-hmm. Those books were solid gold. And I mean, I can feel now how I would feel when I would see one I hadn't read. So
yeah,
that was maybe the first time I felt a real fondness for an author was when I started to read Judy Bloom books. I loved her.
I agree. I think I vividly remember, I think I was in fourth grade when I read Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing. And then I read Super Fudge when it came out. And I remember thinking Super Fudge was the funniest dang book I'd ever read in my whole life. Like, made me laugh out loud. Like, was probably the first book that I think I would read out loud to my parents, who I'm sure didn't think it was that funny.
Right.
But like, I thought it was so funny. I love the way it was written. And then I read Blubber. And
yes, I forgot about Blubber.
Yes, otherwise known as Sheila the Great.
Oh, and, I love that one.
Remember? Yeah, that was such a good one. And because a lot of her characters, like Peter Hatcher, was in other books. You know, like she used her characters kind of overlapped in some books. And then, of course, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Which, it's funny because like Caroline's never read that book. And I'm like, it would be so dated now. You know what I mean? Like,
It would be so dated now. We don't have to get into it, but it would be,
so dated. It makes me laugh because it's like, and I put one on my Instagram story today, but it's like the TikToks you see of like the way girls dance on TikTok now at age 13 and the way they danced when I was 13. Like, it's that same, it's like
that same vibe.
Version of that.
I associate Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. I mean, like almost with such a specific time in my life. Where Mama got me, she got me at one point, I won't get into this much, but she got me the Life Cycle Library.
Oh.
So I could learn about things pertaining to life.
Yes.
And the cycle of life. And and so the way that we did that was that I would read and then Mama would come back and want to know if I had any questions, you know, about what I had read. And, but that was right in that, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, time of my life. And so there's such a strange awkwardness at that point in your life, because you're kind of being entrusted with some adult information, but you can't reconcile it in your head. Like, it's just weird. It was just weird.
Yes.
Like, you don't have any idea how that really plays out. And I was a person who had really made it a pretty far piece in my life, thinking just that you got pregnant if you got married. Like, I just thought that's like, you got married. And then like, it was like some magic God clock clicked on and you could get pregnant.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. So I have such weirdly affectionate memories for that time because of its awkwardness and its, you know, all of that.
Yes. Yeah. Because it was all the things. And like when your mom would say, do you have any questions? And you would want to say yes, but none that I want to ask you.
None that, like, nothing I would ever say. I do remember one specific question that I asked Mama that I'll tell my friends, but I would not say it publicly because it was too embarrassing. But
yeah.
But I really had to work up to that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was but then I remember, because Judy Bloom, I mean, like, you started with Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, but then you went into, I mean, I remember, like, I will say now, because there's got to be a statute of limitations, but I read Deanie, and I read Forever. And Forever, listen, you want to talk about a book that has been read in some back shelves of some libraries everywhere across America.
I don't even know who gave me a copy of Forever. No. I don't know who.
It was bootleg.
But I will tell you this, pages were falling out of that thing. I don't, and again, I don't remember how I got it, but yeah, that was some what year was that? Was that like 1980? 1982.
Yeah, early 1980s probably, but it was something. It was, I mean, I feel like for a long time that was how I learned everything I knew was from Forever.
But so, I'm going to tell you, as Mama would say, that wouldn't be a drop in the bucket now. I mean, that would...
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. I would be interested to read it now as a grown-up.
Yeah.
To even now remember if it was is bad, because at the time it was like, oh my gosh, this is, right. It's like I was reading Judith Krantz, you know? I mean, it was like...
Yeah.
Jackie Which, Collins.
By the way, I did later in high school. I did. I remember my daddy saying to me when I was reading, I think I had a Jackie Collins book, and he was like, I don't know if I was in high school. He was like, I don't know if you should be reading that. I was like, it's fine. It's fine. It's good.
Narrator's
fine.
Voice. It was not fine. It was
yeah, narrator's voice. It, as it turns out, it was not fine. But anyway.
It was the 80s. But I have to say, before we get off Judy Blume, but my very favorite, and this is what got me on the trail of this the other day, thinking about it, was my very favorite of all her books was starring Sally J. Friedman as herself.
Okay.
And so I loved that book, and you're going to know, this is going to make sense to you, because Sally J. Friedman was a young Jewish girl. She was 13. It took place in the years right after World War II had happened. So there was this, and you know.
I know.
You know, that has been a theme in my life, where anything that has to do with that fascinates me. And so much of it was about that she imagined, she kept seeing that she thought Hitler lived in their neighborhood where they lived in Florida. She was afraid of the Nazis, that she had this real active imagination. But but in some ways, like I think the way she like daydreamed and stuff, I really related to Sally J. Friedman.
Right.
Anyway, and so the other night I started thinking, because I looked it up on Amazon, I don't know why, just out of curiosity. And I was like, no, I want to. So I went back and Googled, because I wanted to find the one that had the book cover that I remembered. And so I went back on Google Images to find the book cover that I remembered, because I loved the book cover too, because she's looking in the mirror and she's got on this two-piece like floral sarong kind of outfit with the flower in her hair, because she loved Esther Williams. And so that's what made me start thinking about books that had influenced me.
So. Well, Judy Blume clearly had a big influence in our lives. Clearly.
Hey, can hold on 1 second. I think this may be my exterminator calling. Hold on.
Okay. Okay, so to move away from Judy Blume, here's where I went in high school. Now, this is where I would love to tell you that this is really where I dug into the classics.
Yes.
But what I remember about high school was that I was supposed to read the classics. You know, we were supposed to read, I remember being in AP English and we were reading Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad and, you know, all this stuff. Yeah. I'm going to tell you what I was reading. Any book about twins that had been separated at birth. And one had become very famous and lived in Hollywood, and the other had been down on her luck, but they swapped lives. That's what I was reading in high school. Anything about five friends from college who their lives go in all different directions, but a dramatic or tragic event brings them back together and they find out the real truth about one another's lives. This was my high school wheelhouse. And it's probably telling that I can't think of a single title of one of those books.
Yes.
But I read all of them. I read all of them.
Yes. I remember one of my best friends in high school was named Angie. And I remember that Angie, I think her mom was on a big Danielle Steele kick. And Angie gave me a copy of a Danielle Steele book called The Ring, which there again.
Oh, I read The Ring.
Took place, let me remind you, in World War II.
I did. And I read it. I did read The Ring.
I loved that book. Mm-hmm. I bet I read The Ring over. That's not even on my original list, but I read The Ring over and over and over again. I thought it was just the best story.
Oh, yeah.
It
was I read so many Danielle Steele books. There was no limit to my ability to consume those kinds of books. So I read a lot of Beach Fiction in high school, and then I did what I had to do, you know, to get through the school part. But I don't remember, like... There's nothing really that shaped me in terms of something that was really meaningful to me, but that time in my life definitely sort of solidified my love of reading, because I would read pretty much anything. Again, I needed some twins to have gotten separated or something.
Yes.
But yes. I loved books about people who, you know, had overcome great odds or whatever.
Yes. Had gone. Well, that was, I mean, the Sweet Valley High books, I mean, for years, those were mine. Mm-hmm. Like because we were of the age where, like, when they first started coming out. So it was like to wait on the next Sweet Valley High book, which fortunately a new one came out like once every 6 weeks. And mm-hmm. so you could go get that new book. And I loved reading about the Wakefield twins.
Yes. Oh, I loved those books.
And Elizabeth's relationship with Todd, and then you had Bruce Patman and Lila. It was a lot of turmoil. I forgot about Lila.
Yes. Lila.
Yes, the rich girl who was really sometimes good at heart, but sometimes not. I mean, it was a constant thing. But I will tell you, so I am kind of same. So I had two other books that I thought of that I read over and over again. One I ordered a couple of years ago off of Amazon, and it's super hard to find, but I just had to get it to see if it was as good as I remembered. And I'm going to tell you that it wasn't.
Okay.
But it was called Hail, Hail, Camp Timberwood.
Okay.
It was by Ellen Conford. It was about a girl named Melanie who went off to summer camp for the first time and fell in love. It's a very innocent book, but I loved that book. There was something about the camp thing and going off, and that she fell in love for the first time, and there was a boy's side of the camp and the girl's side of the camp, and just the whole thing to me was, I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved that book. But then on another hand, and you're going to laugh because this is going to tie into our conversation that we're going to have later for Patreon this summer. There was a book that I remember that my mother gave me, and now I know why she gave it to me, because I just looked and I saw that it was like a Focus on the Family recommendation in the 80s. And it was called Just Like Ice Cream. And it was about a girl who has sex and gets pregnant as a teenager. And I am going to tell you that it scarred me for life.
Yeah. That's about what we are going. We're going to get into that on Patreon a little bit. We sure are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like it, I'm sure it was, listen, I don't even remember who wrote it. I just remember the name. And I remember thinking like now I look back and I think it was so comically cast as like the villain and the girl and the whole thing. But I will just say that it really scarred me in a lot of ways. And so that book, I have to include it because it had an impact on me in terms of creating a deep fear in me.
Yes. Yes. Well, that was a lot of the 80s. That was a lot of the 80s strategy for how to keep girls. In line was just scared to death.
Like, I'm really scared. So,
hey y'all, it's me all by myself here towards the end of the episode to talk to you about Thrive Market. What if I told you that you could get high quality organic and non-GMO groceries delivered to your door for a lot less than you're paying now and help out families in need? That is what we can all do with Thrive Market. And as a proud Thrive Market member, I get the products I love. You can get the products you love. And our paid memberships provide a free one for someone in need, like a low-income family or a veteran or a first responder. Thrive Market tailors to over 70 different diets and values, like paleo, keto, plant-based, delivering the highest quality organic and non-GMO food. They also offer clean beauty and bath products, pet staples, and non-toxic cleaning products. Plus, ethical meat, sustainable seafood, clean wine, and more. Here's what I have enjoyed about Thrive Market. I have very specific granola needs, not ashamed to admit it, and they can meet those needs. I have such a wide selection, and I also have very specific face soap needs in terms of wanting my face soap to be clean. I don't want it to have chemicals in it. I like things to be really herby and good. So Thrive Market has a wide selection of those as well. And as a Thrive Market member, I am saving 25 to 50% off traditional retail prices, and their carbon neutral shipping is free on orders over $49. So you can feel great about getting a deal on your favorite clean organic products, and also feel great about helping to support families who need it most. Thrive Market is working all day, every day to make sure members are getting their groceries delivered as fast as possible. And you can learn more about their commitments to customers and their membership matching on their website.
So try Thrive Market and become a member risk-free. Go to thrivemarket.com/bigboo. Join today and you'll get up to $20 in shopping credit toward your first order. That's T-H-R-I-V-E market.com/bigboo to start your risk-free membership and get up to $20 toward your first order. thrivemarket.com/bigboo. Here's the rest of 193.
Yeah, so that was that. I cannot not mention that book.
Okay, so I read a lot of beachy stuff when I was in high school, but when I got to college, I encountered some books that really did. Like, I can honestly say, and I don't say this lightly, I read some books that really did change my life. In terms of kind of opening my eyes to other experiences, other cultures, all that kind of stuff. I took some phenomenal classes in school, that really let us dig into like certain genres of literature. Mm-hmm. But when there are a couple, really probably there are three, and I'll just say them all at one time, that captivated me in such a way and really probably started to make me think about what would it be like to write something, you know, like what would it be like? Now, I've always known that I'm not a fiction writer. I've always known that. And I'm going to get into the nonfiction stuff that really shaped me in a minute. But as far as fiction, works of fiction that really shaped me, in terms of just leaving me kind of awestruck by somebody's ability to craft a work. Uh-huh. The Color Purple by Alice Walker, Ellen Foster, a book called Ellen Foster by Kay Gibbons. It's a tiny little book. It's brilliant. And then The Glass Menagerie, which is of course a play by Tennessee Williams. And those three works, I don't know if it was, I obviously all Southern. Color Purple and Ellen Foster, both with a first person narrator, which I love. Uh-huh. Ellen Foster with a child narrator, which I love. And then The Glass Menagerie with just all manner of Southern dysfunction.
Yes.
So those three are like my collegiate trifecta in terms of things. I to this day, I love them. And I will say, I think Ellen Foster is a sleeper of a work of fiction. And if you have not read it, I just recommend that you do. It is so beautiful and so brilliant. Okay. And I have a really vivid memory of finishing it. The day that I finished it, I was in Starkville and just boo-hooing. So.
Okay. All right. I have not read that.
You would love it. You would love it.
Okay. I need to read it.
You could read it in an afternoon. And the main character is a girl named Starletta, and Starletta has been neglected and she's had a really difficult childhood and just is in a constant state of, can I trust this person? I don't know if I can trust that person. And just the way she sort of endures all the change and the trauma in her life. And it's a beautiful book.
Okay. Okay. And now it's kind of same, but different for me because I was a speech communications major in college. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't read a whole lot in terms of what I had to read in college. I don't remember, but I do remember like pivotal books that made me. So Judy Blume probably made me want to be a writer because I loved the way she told a story, even though I knew I wasn't going to write fiction. But I remember being pretty young and my mom had a copy of If Life is a Bowl of Cherries, What Am I Doing in the Pits?
Irma Bombeck.
Mm-hmm. And remember the cover was like a cartoon of her and she was like surrounded by cherries. And I picked it up and read it one day and I loved Irma Bombeck. Like that started, I read that book. I read Motherhood, the Second Oldest Profession. I read If the Grass is Always Greener. Under the Septic Tank, like all of her books, I feel like were a staple in my life because that was always like, so that to me, she was the first person that gave me an appreciation of real life and like writing about real life and making real life funny. So she was one of my heroes. And then there were two other books that I loved. And this was an author that just really impacted me. And I probably read these later in high school, I think, but one was Jacob Have I Loved by Katherine Patterson.
Okay.
And then the other was Bridge to Terabithia, which she also wrote. And both of those books to me, when I read them, I was like, these are like the best written books I've ever read. Like in that moment. Now, granted, I had been reading Sweet Valley High and Hail, Hail, Camp Timberwood up to this, but I was so stunned and moved by how beautifully both of those stories were told in the way she wrote. And that was the first time I remember being like, wow, like the way she uses words, like just amazed me.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. That was a big one.
I was also, well, I was thinking about this last night. I also have a vivid memory of, I had a professor at State. I've mentioned her to you before, Dr. Marianne Daisy, who was my favorite. She was so influential in my life in so many ways, and was really the first professor who looked at my like essay writing, you know, like my personal narrative essay writing, and saw something, you know, like that would carry me a little bit in there. But she mentioned to me at one point, because she knew how I love to write a personal narrative, a woman named Florence King. And so I read a couple of Florence King books. Now I actually downloaded one a couple of weeks ago because I want to read it again. I have no idea what it's about.
Okay.
I just know that she wrote the personal essay, and she was kind of a little bawdy, you know, like she was not your typical Southern, demure Southern woman. And so I do remember that. But what happened to me after I kind of got out of college and moved into the next phase of my life was I found myself having to read books that I was going to teach kids. Right. So there were a couple of those that I had missed in all my years of school that I read, you know, as I was kind of starting into that phase of my life, that were super impactful for me. One of those was To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, which it's just one of the all-time best. And then a book called, And the Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Yes. I love, 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 love. And Peace Like a River by Leif Inger. I love so much.
Such a good book. Yep. Such a great book.
So all of those kind of parts of different high school curriculums, but books that I think deserve to be parts of different high school curriculums, and books that probably the first books where I, because of where I was in my spiritual life too, and just sort of my personal walk with the Lord, books where I saw so much truth running through the narrative that I don't know, where I thought, oh, there are big lessons here. That was probably the first time where I really read and thought, oh, golly, there's a lot to take away here. So those three I really love.
Yeah, that was it's funny because when you say that, like, I think I didn't read To Kill a Mockingbird until I was in college. And then I'm trying to think. And then what was another? Oh, when I was at A&M, I had to take a theater class, which this is really random, but we had to do a study of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
I love me some Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
And that, listen,
Big Daddy.
I mean, that I was like, now this is some storytelling. Like, I had never read any Tennessee Williams. I didn't know, but it was like, oh, now this is a grown up story. Like,
yes. There's some backstory here. I took I can't remember what the name of the class was. Nancy Hargrove taught it. Another one of my favorite professors at State. I must have taken six classes from her, I think, over the course of college and grad school. But it was a modern drama survey. And so what we had to do was we would read plays like Cat on a Hot Tin Roof or Streetcar Named Desire or Virginia Woolf or whatever. And then we would go to the auditorium and we would act out scenes. And I remember having to act out a scene of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. I'm so tickled thinking about it. I had to act out a scene of A Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And I, no joke, as I read it, I had on a plaid skirt with the coordinating sweater that was red and green that had a little bit of the plaid from the skirt on the shoulder of the sweater.
Yes, ma'am.
And a bow the size of a saucer in my hair with some coordinated flats and probably some hose on. And I was reading Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. But I am such a Tennessee Williams fan. There is nobody who gets at the dysfunction of the deep down dysfunction of patriarchal Southern life like he does.
Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know it was one of those. And I come from, you know, you can appreciate this. And this will be a book I write someday. But I come from a family that was full of secrets, like full of secrets. And when I will never forget reading that play and experiencing that and going, oh, so people actually can, they'll actually write about this. Like this. Yeah,
they'll just throw it out there.
This is fascinating. We'll just put it all out there. I didn't know that we could do that. This is a game changer. Like, it was fascinating to me.
Yeah. I love, love, love Tennessee Williams. I'm so glad that we have that. We have him in common as somebody who shaped us. Listen, yes. we may, while you're here, we may do us a dramatic reading of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
We could. I'm just sitting here, when you were sitting describing reading it in college, I thought, why didn't people have cell phones back then? So we have a video of that somewhere. Because that...
I know.
That's the show I didn't know I needed.
Well, but listen, I don't know that I brought quite the the undercurrent of those lines to the surface. But I'm thinking, really, while you're here, I think we round up Aaron and Jamie. I think we can make this happen. I feel like Aaron could probably get us a set up and ready by the time you get here.
I think she could too. I think we could get some costumes. I feel like we could make this happen. I feel really good about it.
I do too. Listen, the Glass Menagerie was really, of everything I got to teach when I was an English teacher, the Glass Menagerie, I don't know, To Kill a Mockingbird's maybe the top, but Glass Menagerie second. Because when you let kids read that play out loud, and we would always read it out loud, we would do an act a day. When you let them read it out loud and you kind of explain the dynamics, what every single person can relate to is dysfunction and people who are passive aggressive. Mm-hmm. And Tennessee Williams writes a passive aggressive woman better than just about anybody.
Yeah.
So a slightly delusional passive aggressive woman. He had that sucker down pat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
Okay, he knows.
We're gonna dig into this more when you get here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. He sat in some living rooms, is what I'm gonna tell you, and observed some things.
He did.
Good. So then I have to say, in college, but this was the first book, and it had a huge impact in my life. And so this is a hard left, but it was no wonder they call him the Savior by Max Lucado. Okay. Hard left.
Well, I think we probably, I would say for me, Left Behind, the whole Left Behind series was really...
That wasn't even on my list, but yes, ma'am. I read all of those when Perry and I were newlyweds.
Yes,
if you
me
think
too.
I didn't every night, because Perry doesn't really like to read that kind of stuff. But he was interested enough that he'd be like, what happened tonight? And I'd be like, well, I'll tell you what happened tonight. I was so into those books.
I was too. And it kind of, I don't know. Well, I mean, I could analyze it, but they did something to me in terms of probably making me a little afraid, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Keeping my eye out for Nikolai Carpathia.
Yeah.
Who is he? But
I know.
Anyway.
Yeah. It was, those were transformative. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the Max Lucado books were really, I had never heard somebody write about God like that. That made it so relatable and so real and so impactful. Like, he was the first person. And now I feel like there's a lot more of that out there. But back in that time, I don't feel like there was like that. It kind of, no wonder they call him the Savior, kind of undid some of the damage that just like ice cream did to me. It was the antidote to just like ice cream. And I needed that. And so that had a huge impact on me, out of probably anything else that I read in that time period of my life. So,
well, I have three nonfiction writers who, again, we're going, one's going to be like, oh, that I believe that. And then the other two are going to feel like a little bit of a hard left, especially in light of the first one. But when I've said this before, but when I did Beth Moore's Believing God Bible study, I had not been married very long. Alex was a baby. And just reading how she wrote was a game changer for me, because I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I was also at that time, I had started to read Jennifer Weiner's books. I think, did you read Jennifer Weiner's books or did you read her blog back when?
Oh, yes, all.
And
all
she has the same kind of conversational thing happening in fiction where there's just a cadence there that's really, I don't know, there's like a comfort to it. And I found the same thing in Beth's nonfiction, even whether it was writing a Bible study or you were looking at the Believe in God book. But I just loved how I felt like I knew what she sounded like, you know, in real life. And this was long before we actually knew her in our sort of day-to-day lives.
Yeah.
So there was the Jennifer Weiner, Beth, and then in the middle of that, I am reading David Sedaris.
Oh, 100%.
And I will never forget, there was a little tiny collection of David Sedaris essays. Now listen, some of his essays are strong in terms of just language and content. But hey, there was a little book called Holidays on Ice.
Yeah.
That is so wrong.
God.
It is so wrong and it is so right. But that was really when I was like, I want to write like this. I want to make people laugh like he's making me laugh. Like, I did not know I could laugh that hard reading the written word. And so, and I will even say most recently with his book, Calypso, which, again, we're talking about deep family dysfunction that it just gets aired out. Like, we're just going to lay it out. But I love his writing style so much. He's just brilliant. So, and then, of course, I mean, Anne Lamott, like Traveling Mercies, and then, but Bird by Bird, which is one of probably my top five favorite books. I feel like something about reading her was almost felt like a charge, okay. This is what I want to do. This is what I want my words to do. So to be so fiction heavy in the first part of my life, it was really sort of a shift into nonfiction that I don't know. And then, of course, that kind of coincided with writing the blog and all that kind of stuff. But two of my very favorite nonfiction writers are David Sedaris and Anne Lamott. They're both just brilliant.
Yeah. I would agree with both of those. I mean, I think to me, David Sedaris, like just the way he, and Anne Lamott too, like the way they come up with the phrase, like, I think of Anne Lamott when she like talks about you want to make Jesus want to drink gin right out of the cat dish. I'm like, why? I want to come up with that. Like, I want to say that. Like, it's just so funny.
And both of them deeply irreverent, and especially, I mean, David Sedaris especially is biting sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, and I feel like a couple of his books, we talked about this, felt angry, you know? But that Holidays on Ice, especially some of his early stuff, it's so good.
I feel like me talk pretty one day is just hilarious. I mean, oh my gosh, it's so funny. It's so witty. He knows how to pull out the most obscure, bizarre things
and remembers the most obscure details about people.
Yes. And it just makes it so funny. But yes, you just have to know, you're probably going to read him and be offended at some point. You know, you just have to take it as it comes. So, I would agree with those two. And then for me, my other ones are, I remember when I read Bitter is the New Black by Jen Lancaster.
Oh, yeah. I remember you reading that.
Oh, and that was like, she was funny. Like it was, she told her real story. Like it was, she had a blog back then. And she had started as a blogger, and I just thought she was a really funny writer, and I loved her stuff. And so that book to me was like, oh, I remember thinking like, I could do this. Like I could do a version of this or like kind of write like this. And so she was one, you know, if I've mentioned once, I've mentioned a million times that The Middle Place by Kelly Corrigan, I believe.
Yes.
If you haven't heard me mention, I adore her as a writer. Mm-hmm. I just think she's so good and so talented and makes real life, interesting and funny and just pulls things out. And The Middle Place to me is still my favorite book of hers. And then the other one was The Glass Castle by Janine Walls.
Golly.
Which Because here's what that did for me is the way she was able to tell her story, which you're like, this is a tragic story, but yet she made it funny mm-hmm. in the midst of telling it, like pulled the humor out. I was like, that's such a hard balance to find the funny in the midst of the darkness, which I also feel like David Sedaris and Anne Lamott do a great job of that. Mm-hmm. Like it's such a hard balance to go, this thing is really tragic, but I'm going to bring some humor right. to it. Which happens to be my favorite personality trait mm-hmm. in a person. So it stands to reason that those are the writers that I like.
Yeah. Listen, there are a lot of really gifted nonfiction writers to the point that you mm-hmm. think, you know what, I'm just going to pack this up. But it's so good to be able to go back to those books and to be not only reminded of why it's such a joy to read those books, but that they really do inspire you to want to write a little bit more and a little bit better. So
yeah,
it's good.
Yep. I agree. And I would add, I'm going to add two more real quick. Just, I would add Bossy Pants by Tina Fey was that same.
I should have put that on my list because I have such a vivid memory of being at the beach. Mm-hmm. Alex was little, mm-hmm. reading that book, like laughing my head off. Again, the language is not great, y'all, in it. There's language is not great in any of these nonfiction books we've mentioned, except for Beth's.
No. And Max Lucado's. He doesn't use a lot of the F word. It's a general rule.
But that also, I was like, okay, that makes me want to try to write funny, you know, to continue to work at trying to write funny. And that's such a good one. Okay, what was your other one?
Yeah. And then my other one is, I really loved, it was Mindy Kaling's first book, Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me?
Me too.
Was such a good, because here's what she and Tina Fey both do so well, and they do it in different ways, but it's the same thing, is they take these everyday stories where, like, you read it and you're like, if you just were to condense this down to its most boring thing, this is not a story. Mm-hmm. This is about a boy who was mean to you when you were in junior mm-hmm. high. But the way they tell it and they bring out the details mm-hmm. and the phrases they use and the one-liners, I'm like, oh my gosh, you just made this story that everybody's experienced. Like, this is not a unique experience, but you've made it so dadgum funny that I want to read it over and over mm-hmm. again. And that inspires me to figure out how to do that.
I agree. I have two more books on my list. I've mentioned them both recently. But there have been a couple of books just this year that have been really, really, really meaningful to me. As I kind of hit the wall with all my feelings and anger and all that kind of stuff last September. And so as a 9, I have to process everything in reverse. I have to look back and reflect. I can't process well in the moment. And so two books that have really helped me, as I have processed stuff, are The Dearly Beloved by Kara Wall, which for whatever mm-hmm. reason, I think probably because you have two characters in that book, you have two couples who are ministry together, and you have, and two people in that book who really wrestle with doubt. There was something about that was so comforting to me, if only from the perspective of, it just is not, we always know where our hope is, and I always know who my hope is, mm-hmm. but there are just times where things feel uncertain, and it's okay for things to feel uncertain and shaky. And it's okay to question in those times. I don't know. There was something about that I just loved. And then the other one is a book by Barbara Brown Taylor called Leaving Church. That's a nonfiction book that's beautifully written. Good grief. It's beautifully mm-hmm. written. That's her story of really weariness in ministry. And it was just really good medicine. Sometimes it's just comforting to read somebody else's story of struggle. And just, even if you're not currently struggling, even if you're struggling, but the circumstances are different, but just to see not even how somebody moved through it, but just that they moved through it. They moved through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what that book was for me. I was like, she moved through it. Yeah. So just beautiful, beautiful writing. And I don't know. I just wish I had more time to read more stuff, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the big challenge at this mm-hmm. stage in life, is having the time. But anyway, yeah. I do. I,
And I get distracted by so many other things. I mean, I think there's just so much other, because I've really thought about that. Like, it's funny because, I mean, I get distracted by Netflix. I get distracted by Instagram stories. I just, there's so many other things to grab my attention, and I'm not good about making myself focus unless there's a book, like, because like this week I've started, and by the time you read this, I'm sure I've finished, but I've started The Heir Affair, which is the sequel to The Royal We, and I've been reading it because I've been really excited about it coming out. But like, just to dive into something that I'm not sure, it takes me a while now to want to do that.
So yay for books.
Yeah, books are amazing.
So what are you reading right now, by the way? We can end with that. We can end with our current reads. You said The Heir Affair, anything else?
The Heir Affair. No, that's all I'm reading right now. The Heir Affair, which is the sequel to The Royal We. I really like it so far. So it's funny and written as well as the first one. And then I think what I'm going to read next, I think I'm going to actually bring it on my trip, is, and I've had it for a while, but it's The Dutch House.
Oh, the Ann Patchett book.
The Ann Patchett book. And I've heard really good things about that. And my mother-in-law actually brought that over to me a couple of months ago to read, and I just haven't. So I think I'm going to bring that one with me to Birmingham.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm reading right now. Well, of course, I finished my Jessica Simpson open book.
Yeah.
Which, listen.
We're going to talk about on Patreon.
We are going to talk about that on Patreon. I am reading right now Latasha Morrison's Be the Bridge, which I had not read before. Okay. And also reading a book by Isabel Wilkerson called The Warmth of Other Suns. Which is about the Great Migration, and I've heard of it a lot, but the first story in the book is about a woman from Oklahoma, Mississippi, and I think because it was, which is near Starkville, and I think because it was Mississippi, okay. Beth texted me to see if I had read it, if I had read the book, and you know, there are a few people in your life where they say, have you read this book? You'll go,
yeah,
no, but I will.
But I'm going to. Yeah.
And so I immediately downloaded it. So I've got those two going. And then I have The Heir Affair on deck, but I haven't started it yet. So
Okay. That's
what I'm saving for when you're here. That's what I'm going to read at night
okay. When
you're here.
Oh, good. Then we can discuss it. We can discuss it. Okay. Perfect. Okay.
All right. Well, this was fun.
It was. I loved it. So good talk.
All right. We'll talk to y'all later.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.